Thank you, Mikhail, for introduction as well as for inviting me to this excellent program. Can you hear the microphone, or at least I cannot? I will talk about, as it's clear from the title, about the heat kernel for the Schrödinger operator. And the simplest setting here is it, not good enough. Well, what's the simplest situation is just we have operator H minus delta plus phi in Rn, where phi is potential, which has unusual notation. The usual V will be used for volume elsewhere, so I use phi for the potential. The stress on estimates will be on large time behavior, so I assume that this potential is smooth, so we don't have problems with small time, smooth function, right? Also, under conditions where all this will be applied, the operator H will be essentially self-adjoint and bounded, semi-bounded from below, or even positive definite, so that the heat semigroup makes sense in as its spectral theory is defined, and it has integral kernel, which is called the heat kernel, right? I will denote it by pt phi of x, y, so it's function of t, x, y, and depending on phi. So it's already was mentioned a few talks that heat kernel is a fundamental solution to the corresponding heat equation, right? And it's well known that for it's classical that when phi is zero, we have the classical heat kernel Gauss-Weierstrass function, which is a model for obtaining various heat kernel bounds for more complicated situations, right? So basically, whenever one has some disturbed heat kernel or perturbed heat kernel, one compares the result with this model heat kernel, right, in most cases. So interesting part of this talk will be about the situation when function phi, the potential phi, has quadratic decay, has this form, constant divided by mod x squared for large x and something for small x. Now that's the purpose of eventually in the end I will give estimates for this operator. Right. So the approach will be used is as follows. This actually has been known for a long time. What to do when you have a perturbed equation. One try first to find a positive solution to the corresponding Schrödinger operator, minus delta H plus phi H, and assume that it has positive solution. In fact, all this, what I'm telling about, will be restricted to this case. Then consider the following operator, which I call the weighted Laplace operator, for the reason which will be clear a little later, 1 by H squared, divergence H squared delta. The Nabla. Nabla is gradient operator. So if H is 1, then this divergence of gradient is exactly classical Laplace operator. And now this has some perturbed terms here. This operator has advantage that it is symmetric with respect to measure H squared dx, where dx stands for the Lebesgue measure. And one can write down the heat equation corresponding to this operator, and it has a heat kernel which will be denoted by pt tilde in already in this space L2 H squared dx, right? So this operator, whenever we consider this operator, it should be considered in the corresponding space L2 with weighted measure H squared dx. In fact, this consideration can be done regardless of whether function H solves this equation or not. For any positive smooth function, one can do this. But the fact that H satisfies the Schrödinger equation, this elliptic equation, implies that operator delta tilde has another representation, just as composition of delta minus phi with H and 1 over H, considering H and 1 over H as multiplication operators. Well, this is a very simple exercise. Just by expanding this operator and this operator, one gets the same, provided H satisfies this equation. And this identity means that delta tilde and delta minus phi are unitary equivalent, because one can consider mapping f goes to hf as isometry of L2 with weighted measure, h squared dx with L2 with standard Lebesgue measure. And by this one gets easily that this is isometry, and this isometry actually serves to provide unitary equivalence between these two operators. Right? In turn, it implies that if we know, say, the Hit kernel for delta tilde, then the Hit kernel for delta minus phi also exists and related to Pt tilde by this very simple identity, just by the fact that the operators are unitary equivalent. So in order to find the Hit kernel for the Schrödinger operator, it's sufficient to find Hit kernel for weighted Laplace operator, this one, and to know, of course, the function h, right? So this is not new, it's a very old result, and unfortunately I don't know to whom to attribute this, right? It's known for a long time, it's used in many papers, and but the difficulty when applying this is first of all to find h, of course, and then to estimate or to find the Hit kernel corresponding to weighted Laplace operator. The main difficulties lie there. If you want to estimate Hit kernel Pt phi, then you need to get some estimate for all the entries on the right hand side, and that is the major point here. Whenever you can do this, this works. If you cannot do this, it's pointless. It flows a little bit. One simple example when this works, if function h, which is solution, maybe I write on the board that to have it always, h is solution to this equation and h is positive. If h happens to be bounded from above and below by positive constants, then operator delta tilde is uniformly elliptic. And if it's uniformly elliptic, then it's well known that the corresponding Hit kernel admits Aronson's estimates. Aronson theorem with little extension applies, and one gets for the Hit kernel Pt tilde estimate exactly through the Gaussian Hit kernel, where this sign approximately equal or something means that the ratio of the right-hand side and left-hand side are bounded by constants. Or rather to say, there is upper bound and lower bound with the same right-hand side, but possibly with different constant. C small and C capital are positive constants, which may be different for upper and lower bound. But this is rather specific situation. So basically, if H is bounded, then you get everything, right? You get estimate for P tilde, you get estimate for H, and therefore it applies that Pt phi admits the same Gaussian estimate. But this rather restricted situation, because bounded solutions occur normally when phi decays quite quickly. For example, it's possible to prove that if phi decays faster than quadratically, that mod x to 2 plus positive epsilon when x is large, then indeed one has bounded solution. But for larger functions, phi normally it's not the case. So before I can handle this situation, I will actually describe the tools which can be used to obtain estimates of the Hit kernel P tilde in more general situation when H is unbounded, right? And these are results from joint paper with Laurent Salov-Cost, published in 2005. Right. So these results I will describe in the context of Riemannian manifolds. Certainly equality. Something strange. Anyway, This is equality. Some perturbation. And this is most convenient setting, one of the convenient settings for such situation. So let M be arbitrary Riemannian manifold so far, and nu be Riemannian measure. Now we smooth positive function, fix smooth positive function M, and consider nu measure mu, which has this density with respect to Riemannian measure. And then we'll just consider measure mu as the main reference measure on manifold. Normally, when talking about Riemannian manifold, one uses Riemannian measure as reference measure, but here we'll use more general measure mu. And then define Laplace operator delta mu associated with this measure by the following identity, right? This is 1 over m divergence m grad, where divergence and grad are Riemannian operators, operators related to the Riemannian metric. Again, if m is 1, we get just Laplace-Beltrami operator for this Riemannian metric. If m is not 1, we get a little more general operator, which in local coordinates has the following form, where gij is a Riemannian tensor. Basically, we don't need this operator in local coordinates, but just in case to have a look, one can at least imagine what it is. Second order elliptic operator in divergence form. So in general, in what follows, I will assume that M is geodesically complete. In this case, it's always the case that delta mu is essential self-adjoint operator with domain C naught infinity in L2 and has a positive smooth heat kernel, right? So which I'll denote by PTXY. This is similar to the fact that the Laplace-Beltrami operator always has smooth positive heat kernel, but these results are easily extended to this weighted situation. So basically,
M is arbitrary weight.
This is arbitrary, right? Smooth. Well, one can of course positive and smooth. Of course, one can handle also non-smooth situation, but in this case, heat kernel is not smooth function, so this is not the point.
I mean, no decay of growth condition.
What? No condition on growth and so on, just positiveness. Right. You see, one of the points here, which is important to realize, that we consider couple of M and mu. M is Riemannian manifold where we have some distance function, geodetic distance, say, operator like gradient, divergence, and so on. And mu is measure, right? And geodesical completeness, for example, is a property of geodesical distance. It doesn't depend on choice of measure. And distance we keep the same as it's independent of measure. All we change is only measure. Right. Yes, indeed, many results are known for Riemannian manifolds are extended quite easily to weighted manifolds. So this couple, I would call it weighted manifold. Right. Again, this is not a new object. It's used in by many authors already, in particular by Brian Davis, Isaac Chavel, and others. Right. So now some notations. Again, geodesic distance denoted by dxy, geodesic ball denoted by bxr, ball of radius r centered at y, and vxr is measure of this ball. This is volume function. Basically, for the results which I will state, it's important to this volume of ball will enter as a part of the statement. So it's important geometric property of the manifold, of the weighted manifold, which will be used, right? Here, of course, this measure mu is used to define this function. Oh. Now, type of estimate of heat kernel which I look for. This estimate is going to be of this type. Let us say that the heat kernel of this weighted manifold satisfies the Li-Yau estimate if it satisfies estimate like that. So it's has upper and lower bound through the expression where we have Gaussian exponential term with geodetic distance here, and the term in front of exponential depends on the volume, right? Volume of ball of radius square root of t. Say, for example, in Rn, this would be term square root of t to power n, what exactly enters the Gaussian heat kernel, t to power n over 2, right? But in a more general situation, say on situation of manifolds of non-negative Ricci curvature and the Laplace-Beltrami operator, Li and Yao proved that heat kernel satisfies exactly this estimate with the volume function, Riemannian volume function in this case. Whatever is this function, it enters the heat kernel estimate. So it's quite a big class of manifolds, and this estimate actually true not only for this situation, but also for a class of weighted manifolds, and there are even, in certain terms, necessary and sufficient conditions when one can have this estimate. I will mention them in the next transparencies. So these are just definitions, right? So far I don't claim any estimate. Except for reference to Li Yao theorem. So one more definition, this time of more topological nature rather. So from now on, as I said, we assume that M is geodetically complete manifold. And one more condition which will be needed is so-called annulus condition, which means the following. So there exists a point O which will be fixed and called the pole of manifold or reference point, such that for any couple of points x and y which are at the same distance r from this point, they can be connected by continuous path which stays entirely within certain annulus between the balls of radius k capital R and k minus 1 capital k capital minus 1 r, where k is a large constant and r is also sufficiently large. So basically, this is a little bit weaker condition than having this annulus to be connected. If annulus is connected, then of course this is true. Any two points can be connected by a path, but here we require this only for points lying on this sphere of radius r. Right. It turns out to be more convenient condition than just connectedness. It's more stable, and it's not sensitive to little holes on manifolds. Interesting to realize that Rn satisfies condition AC if n is at least 2, but R1 doesn't. Right? R1 has two n's, of course. So from the next considerations, R1 is excluded. Formally, the results which I'm going to state do not, I don't claim them for R1, just for R2 and higher. Okay, just move it here. So on these two transparencies, on the right and on the left, basically all necessary definitions. Still some more yet to come. Right. So now we come close to the statement. Assume that heat kernel of the weighted Laplace operator on a weighted manifold mu satisfies Li Yao estimate. That is. Now it's assumption. Right? Now consider some positive smooth function H. So far is arbitrary function. We don't have any Schrödinger operator and so on. Just arbitrary smooth positive function. And consider new measure, mu tilde, which is having density h squared with respect to mu. Now we consider couple m mu tilde, also a weighted manifold with the corresponding weighted Laplacian delta mu tilde, and let pt tilde be its heat kernel. So the question which will be addressed here is, given the fact that heat kernel of weighted manifold MU satisfies Li Yao, what one can say about the heat kernel of measure mu tilde when you do such a change, right? You just change measure, you don't change Riemannian structure. So if H is again bounded between two positive constants, then one can claim that the P tilde also satisfies Li Yao estimate. This actually quite non-trivial result, but from the point of view of what I want, is trivial case, right? It follows from the fact that Li Yao estimate is equivalent to certain conditions which remain true when we apply such transformation, right? It's the conditions which are not sensitive to changing H by constant factor. So basically, I would like to handle situation when this change of measure is given by unbounded function H, so that one cannot apply such thing and still to claim certain estimate for P tilde, right? Again, to state the result, I need the following notation. So we are in the situation when manifold is geodesically complete and satisfies this AC condition, annulus condition, and denoted by mod x distance from x to the pole, right? Pole is fixed for the for what follows, by Vr, volume of ball of radius r centered at the origin. All this is in terms of measure mu, measure of B, not R. So this will be kind of geometric characteristic of this manifold, this function which characterizes its volume, right? How volume changes with R. And function H will be characterized in terms of, again, how it changes with radius. At this moment, I introduce function H bar, which is just supremum of H on this sphere, right, on sphere of radius r. But as will be clear from the next transparency, this function will be nearly radial. So so here is the first statement. Suppose mu is a geodesically complete weighted manifold which satisfies annulus condition, right, and Li Yao estimate. Maybe I just keep it also here, if I have enough space. Yeah, Li Yao estimate is over here. So additional assumptions are as follows. Suppose that function H is nearly radial function. That means that H bar, which is function depends only on R, and H are in finite ratio provided mod x is R. Right? Up to constant multiple, H can be replaced by H bar of R. Right? And assume also that function H bar is practically of power type. So when radius change by factor 2, these functions also change at most by a constant factor. Right? This means together that function H is radial up to constant factor and kind of power function also up to constant factor. So this is quite trivial, simple assumptions. A little less obvious assumption is the following. Relation between function H bar and function V, volume function, right? V is a volume function. Yeah, it's here, a little distorted. The condition which is needed here is condition on actual on the product H squared times V, right? If we denote it, say, by F, say, of R, it's H bar squared times V R. So this is condition that integral of FR DR is bounded DR by R is bounded by constant times FR for large enough R. For example, if FR is power function, put it some say gamma, then when is it satisfied? This must be the condition. Then when we integrate R to power gamma minus 1, we get R to gamma, right? So this is true, of course, if gamma is larger than 0, right? If gamma is 0, then even if we have it not from 0, even if we neglect here that this function may have integral infinity here, still it's not true, because when we integrate with gamma equal 1, we get log, whereas here we get constant. So gamma, positiveness of gamma comes as equivalent condition for that. So basically, this is restriction on the jointly on function H and function V. Then the claim is as follows. If we consider measure mu tilde, which is H squared d mu, then the corresponding heat kernel P tilde also satisfies Liao estimate. But no, this Liao estimate will be on the weighted manifold M mu tilde. In particular, volume function will be already related to mu tilde, not to original measure mu. And moreover, the condition 3 for that is not only sufficient but also necessary condition, provided 1 and 2 are standing assumptions, right? So in order that Pt tilde satisfies Liao estimate, condition 3 is necessary and sufficient, provided 1 and 2 hold. That's the statement. So I will show application of this later in for the Schrödinger operator. But at this moment, I will say a few words about the proof. No, that's the way around. This one here. So, what kind of ideas are used to this proof? For this proof, first of all, one uses the following result. That Liao estimate is equivalent to so-called uniform parabolic Harnack inequality, which I don't explain here, because itself it's equivalent to another two conditions, which can be used instead, as follows. So first of all, volume doubling property, that volume of any ball of radius 2r and volume of concentric ball of radius r are in finite ratio. And secondly is the Poincaré inequality. When you take arbitrary smooth function in any ball, subtract its mean in this ball, then this integral L2 norm of the difference admits the estimate through the gradient of F, L2 norm of the gradient, times R squared. So this is exactly the same scaling parameter as in Rn. So basically this inequality is well known in Rn, and the name Poincaré inequality is exactly refers to this inequality in Rn. On the manifold situation, we consider actually a little weaker version, because ball on the right hand side here is larger than ball on the left hand side. Instead of 2, one can put any constant factor larger than 1, which allows to get rid of problems with the boundary of ball. Right, so basically what I was saying, that Liao inequality, Liao estimate, which is here, is equivalent to the following fact, that for all balls and for all functions f's like here, volume doubling property and Poincaré inequality holds. So these are, of course, simpler for proving, for checking, rather than working directly with heat kernel, because this one purely geometric property, and this involves only first order operator, gradient operator, rather than second order Laplace operator. And moreover, these two properties are stable under uniform change of measure. One can see, for example, if measure is changed by function which is bounded from above and below, then both properties remain true, just constant factor change. That's why changing a measure by a factor which is bounded from above and below by constant doesn't change Liao estimate. Right. So that's the first thing which is used in the proof. So in order to prove that heat kernel satisfies Liao estimate, is sufficient to check these two conditions. In our case, one needs to check this condition with measure mu tilde, right, for change measure. For the proof, one considers various types of bolts. Since one needs to check these properties for all bolts, and turns out it's easy to do for some bolts, it's more difficult to do for other kind of bolts, right? So one distinguishes bolts of two or rather three kinds. Let us call a ball remote if its radius, for example, on this picture, if its radius is smaller than half of distance to the origin O or the pole O, right? Like on this picture, radius of ball is relatively small, so ball is far away from the center. That's why it's remote. And so these two balls are remote on this picture, right? And ball is called central if its center is the origin, right? This is a central ball. And this ball is neither remote nor central. And the first step is to check that in order to verify conditions, volume doubling and Poincaré inequality for all balls, is sufficient to check them for central balls and for remote balls. That means for balls like that and for balls like that. But whenever one needs to consider a ball like that, by expanding it by constant factor, one can reduce it either to remote ball or to central ball. So balls which are neither remote nor central are easily covered by other balls, right? So it's sufficient to restrict to central balls and to remote balls. That's the first thing to realize. And the next step is how to obtain these conditions for central balls. Ah, okay. Just it's more convenient to talk from this projector. So the next lemma shows how to obtain volume doubling and Poincaré inequality for central balls, provided you know them for remote balls, right? One more reduction in the family of balls. So volume doubling and Poincaré inequality hold for all balls if and only they hold for remote balls, plus the following condition. So, and this condition is relatively simple. For all points x, if we consider ball centered at zero with a boundary going through x, then volume of this large ball and volume of this small ball of fraction of r should be comparable, right? This is r, and this is, say, 1/100 or whatever, some fixed small fraction of r, right? If doubling volume property holds for all balls, then this is obviously true. But one here claims that having this condition is sufficient to obtain eventually volume doubling property and Poincaré inequality also for central balls, and this which will imply by the previous remark that they hold for all balls, right? Basically, this lemma allows to reduce the problem to checking volume doubling and Poincaré inequality only for remote balls. And in addition to that, one needs to check this VC stands for volume comparison property, and which is enough. Of course, it's much simpler than just checking, say, for example, Poincaré inequality. So it's, if you know well what happens with the measure, then it's relatively easy to check this condition. Right. So this basically main technical lemma, which is heart of the matter of this proof. Right. So, a couple of words about the proof of this lemma. So first of all, the fact that this condition implies volume doubling for central balls is quite simple. It's more or less straightforward that it's equivalent to volume doubling. But turns out that the condition VC is used also to prove the Poincaré inequality for central balls, and this is quite non-trivial thing. So it's done in the following manner. So let us consider some central ball. So this is part of its boundary here. And one split this ball into smaller annuli, like that, where the radii go in geometric sequence, say 2 to minus kr. R is big radius, where we want to check the Poincaré inequality. And then we split it into smaller annuli, sequence of annuli. And then consider the sequence of annuli as a graph. Each annuli represents a point in the graph. The graph is linear, so the edges of the graph are those annuli which have in common boundaries, so they are connected by H. So we have linear graph, but this graph is weighted. Each point is given weight equal to the volume of this annuli. So it's then on the graph one can consider also function theory, one can consider discrete gradient, of course, one can consider discrete integration and so on with those weights here. And condition VC, volume comparison, is actually used to prove a certain discrete version of Poincaré inequality on this graph. So basically, considering this graph, one states something analogous of Poincaré inequality here and proves it using conditions VC. Then one proves also Poincaré inequality in each annulus. So each annulus can be actually covered by a fixed finite number of balls. And in each ball is remote here. That's why one has annuli here, right? If one covers each of them by a ball, then all balls will be remote balls. And in each remote ball, there is Poincaré inequality. And then it turns out one can merge this Poincaré inequality together, obtain Poincaré inequality in each annulus. So basically we have Poincaré inequality kind of in two directions. In radial direction, which is discrete one, and in tangential direction, which is Poincaré inequality in each annulus. And turns out one can merge these two together to obtain Poincaré inequality in the whole ball. So it's very similar to so-called discretization techniques, right? It's already for quite a while, as people started using these techniques, that, for example, if manifold is split into small cells, so that in each cell one has Poincaré inequality, and the graph which is based on those cells also satisfies Poincaré inequality, then one can get Poincaré inequality globally. But the only difference is that the cells do not have to be small. Here they are quite big. These are just annuli. One doesn't care whether they are small or not. All one cares the certain functional properties of those cells, right? And here one can manages to complete this proof in this manner. All right. So what happens next after having proved this lemma? Theorem one is proved as false. Now we have to have this theorem somewhere. Looks like I lost it, huh? This one more. No, it's not. I don't know where I put it, right? Just a minute. I'll try. to get it, because I need to refer to this. Ah, it's here. So lemma is there, right? Theorem is there. Yeah, okay, that's what one needs here. So what one needs to check in order to prove the theorem, one needs to prove that heat kernel on manifold M mu tilde satisfies the Liouville estimate. One needs to prove that on this weighted manifold, volume doubling and Poincaré inequality are true. Right? One first checks volume doubling and Poincaré inequality on remote ball. So on remote ball, there is no problem, because on remote ball, which is far away, function H varies by constant factor. It doesn't change much. Therefore, change of measure happens almost by constant factor, and Poincaré inequality and volume doubling do not change when we change measure by constant factor or nearly that. So there is no problem in checking volume doubling and Poincaré inequality for remote ball. And the next ingredient one needs here is VC condition. Turns out, by rewriting this condition, that it becomes exactly condition 3 here. One needs this condition for measure mu tilde, right? Turns out, if you rewrite it in terms of function H and initial function V, then one gets condition 3. So the condition 3 is nothing but VC condition for measure mu tilde. Right. Therefore, having this condition, we conclude by lemma 2 that volume doubling and Poincaré inequality hold for all balls for measure mu tilde. And this the way we obtain Liouville estimate for the heat kernel P tilde for measure mu tilde. Right. That's basically the proof. Now, what it means that heat kernel P tilde satisfies Liouville estimate. This is the estimate. But now we use function V tilde here, which is volume of ball with respect to measure mu tilde. And again, it's relatively simple to see that in terms of original measure, function V tilde XR is estimated as follows. This up to constant factor, this is VXR times H bar squared of mod X plus R. And therefore, if we plug it here, we obtain the following estimate. This is Liouville estimate on manifold with measure mu tilde, and I'll denote it by Ly with tilde here. So it's the same Liouville estimate, but it's expressed in terms of original measure mu. And explicitly refer to function H, right? So that's the final result of this theorem, which one can apply then, relatively simple. Now it comes to one more remark before applications. Turns out it's easier to first symmetrize this estimate by using the fact that heat kernel is actually symmetric in X and Y, whereas the right-hand side isn't symmetric. One can then apply the same with Y and X switched, and then takes square root of the product and one little trick more, and then one gets estimate in this form. So it's symmetrized, with X and Y symmetrized inside H, but it's convenient to keep it's non-symmetrized in the volume function. Right. Basically, the application of the theorem I will be showing in this form. So maybe I just put it also here. Now, application, or rather example already, in Rn, coming back to having in mind original question about Schrödinger operator. So we start with Rn, n at least 2, and mu be Lebesgue measure, and h be positive smooth function. First, assume that h of x behaves like x to certain power beta, angular brackets of x is just 1 plus mod x, so we avoid 0. Right? Beta is some real power. So conditions 1 and 2, which are here, obviously satisfied for any function h like that. It's power function, which is practically depending on radius, on mod. Right? Condition 3, now we know exactly function v. V is r to n. And beta is rather h bar this function is exactly r to beta, so we get inequality like that, right? So it's like an example which I showed before. This condition is satisfied whenever this power 2 beta plus n is positive. That was gamma in this example. That means beta is larger than minus n over 2. So under these conditions, one can apply theorem 1 to obtain heat kernel estimates with h being this change function, right? Or rather, to heat kernel p tilde, which corresponds to operator delta tilde, right? So substituting the value of h just into this formula. We know now function v explicitly, function h also is given. We obtain the estimate for this situation as follows. This is estimate of heat kernel for this operator with function h like that, provided beta is larger than minus n over 2. So it has Gaussian exponential term, t to n over 2 standard term, but two additional multiples appear here, which is due to this change of measure. And the powers are beta here. Right. Mod x plus square root of t and mod y plus square root of t. These two factors appear just exactly from these two. Now to proceed further with Schrödinger operator, assume now that function h has exact value mod x to power beta for large x. And for small x is something which we don't control. Then we define function phi capital just by delta h divided by h, so that we have that h satisfies the corresponding Schrödinger operator. Basically we construct potential for this positive solution, right? So an easy computation shows that this function for large x has the form constant, some constant denoted by b, by mod x squared, where b is expressed through beta by this simple expression, beta squared plus n minus 2 times beta. Or now we turn this upside down and say we want to have first beta and then choose first b and then choose beta, and then we solve quadratic equation and obtain the formula for beta through b, and which is valid provided B has the following lower bound. So the method which I am going to describe works when B is at least minus n over 2 minus 1 squared. Right? So assuming that this is true for coefficient beta, we obtain estimate. This is at least minus n over 2 plus 1. In particular, this is larger than minus n over 2. And that was the necessary condition for application of this theorem. So as you see, it is satisfied. So we can apply the estimate which is here. This is the condition, right? Whenever we have parameter b in definition of function phi at least minus n over 2 minus 1 squared. Right. So now we consider the Schrödinger operator delta h minus phi h equals to 0, where phi is defined exactly by this formula. In particular, for large x, it's having this form, right? And finally, we use the relation between heat kernel for Schrödinger operator with the heat kernel of weighted measure times hx, hy, and we know everything. We know h function h, which is this one, right? We know heat kernel, which is here, p tilde, and we just plug it here and obtain the following estimate, which is the result which I was heading from the very beginning to, that heat kernel satisfies the estimate with standard term constant by T to N over 2, standard Gaussian term, but additional factor which appear here has the following forms, right? 1 plus square root of T divided by mod X, roughly speaking, and the same with Y, to power minus beta. And know that if our starting point was number B, then beta is this one. So beta depends on B in such a nonlinear way. So we get this most interesting term which appear here, right? What exact power of such term is here? In particular, interesting regime when T is large, so that Gaussian term disappears, being equal to constant. By merging all these terms together, we obtain, in this case, estimate mod x to power beta, mod y to power beta, and T becomes the power n over 2 plus beta. Additional powers comes from these terms, right? And that's the most interesting part for me here, because it shows that long-time behavior of this heat kernel becomes essentially dependent on the parameter beta, where beta depends on B. So basically, this constant B in the definition of function phi enters in some way to the power of T here for long-time behavior, right? Basically, this phenomenon was observed before. In particular, I learned about that such things can happen from the paper already long ago by Brian Davis and Barry Simon. They obtained some estimate, a long-time estimate, but not two-sided one. But they showed that the constant B could enter the power in some nonlinear way. But the result wasn't that sharp, right? And right, maybe I should stop. Although there are some more interesting phenomena, I should stop at this point. And thank you for attention.
If you have an H that's going back to the very beginning, have an H that's a super solution in the sense that the right hand side is positive, can you do anything?
No, unfortunately, this method needs this exact formula. That's a major point here. This exact formula depends on H being exact solution, right? Maybe one can get something, but one needs to work more. Some additional argument is required.
Can you say a few words about the other interesting phenomena?
The other interesting phenomena, thank you for this question, related to the fact that function phi here is defined in this way only for large values of x, whereas for small values of x, it's given by this formula, which we don't control, right? We choose function h to be mod x to beta for large x and extend it for small x arbitrarily, being positive and smooth. And therefore, values of phi for small values of x are not under control. They are given by whatever they are given, right? It turns out that really this estimate in the borderline case is when b is exactly equal to minus this critical value, this estimate becomes unstable. So it actually depends on how you extend this phi to zero, right? And maybe I just show one more estimate here. Right, is it here or not? Trying to put together two things, right? For this borderline case, the estimate of the heat kernel which I was showing looks like that. But by taking potential phi to be a substantially larger than given by formula 3, one can get it added additional logarithmic term here. Right, turns out that in this situation, the following happens. If we consider the exact B naught is this negative term, right? So exact potential would be like that. whereas phi 1 is potential for which is polynomial as without logarithm estimate is true, and phi 2 is higher potential for small values of x where this additional logarithmic term appears, right? Whereas all they coincide exactly for x larger than, say, 1 or 2, right? When maybe there is borderline between them, which I don't know, that for large enough phis we get this estimate, for small phis we get the other estimate, and what happens in between, I don't know. So this is an interesting situation when local change of potential changes global behavior by logarithmic factor. It's certainly, again, not new phenomena, but it's interesting that one can get precise description of this phenomena in this situation. That's what I mentioned here. And that's happened only in the borderline case, and for a very critical situation when constant is critical.
Is there a way to start with an arbitrary potential and to get estimates on
it? Well, if you can find function H, then yes, that's the point. Right. That's main point is how to find positive solution. Depend on if you can start with certain potential and find positive solution, then yes. Here, we are lucky that the potential of interest has obvious positive solution. Right. In fact, this additional heat kernel estimate comes from second solution. And second solution is, one writes ODE to, instead of having a Schrödinger operator, one has writes ODE in radial directions. And of course, the second order ODE, it has two independent solutions, right? One of them is this one, and the other in this situation is something with logarithm, and this gives rise to the second estimate, right? But in general, of course, I don't know if it depends on solving. Still, you need at least one solution.
One question about the potential. If you have log in the potential, can you do anything like this?
You mean
one of the interesting potentials would be not just this one, but also slightly...
X squared log something. Yes, of course. Yes, this has certain solutions, right? It
can
works.
Recover the logs in the.
Yeah, certainly. If it has a form, say something X squared times log with something, I guess one gets something. Yeah. Let's see. No, I don't have it here. Right. I think one. I don't remember already. I think one. Get something in this case. Right. I guess one can write a solution, right, in this situation. No?
One needs two sided estimates.
Or at least
you can prove that the solution exists.
Or maybe get estimates for solution because one doesn't. Yeah, I guess for such fully radius situation with explicit phi, I guess one can get asymptotic of solution, and that's enough for, yeah, I guess something is positive.